The guest speaker tonight is from Logan. She's a student at Utah State University. Guest speaker is Leslie Young.
Just a short introduction about myself. And my name is Leslie Young, and I am 43 years old. I live in Logan right now with a roommate and two cats. Two cats actually own the apartment I just paid them rent. For the last 19 years, I've been raising my daughter pretty much on my own, except for the great help and support of my parents, who are here tonight, and whom I wish to publicly thank for all their love and support and for being here tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. I love you. My daughter has moved out on her own to the San Francisco Bay Area and is living life on her own. I've had jobs on and off, but mostly off, and I've been trying to finish school. I'm happy to say that I'm in my senior year. I'm majoring in English and Art in Interdisciplinary Studies, and I should graduate this spring if all goes well. I'm also a psychic advisor, card reader, and artist. If anyone is interested, I can give you my card afterwards. I know it's a shameless plug, but if anyone is interested, I can give you my card. I was educated as an esthetician, but my near-death experience happened in the middle of my schooling, and I felt that afterwards, I wasn't interested in it anymore. This caused a problem at school, but I did graduate and took a job as a pedicurist. I hated it, but I persevered to pay the bills, and I also took a job delivering pizzas just so I could make ends meet. I graduated with honors from high school and have been on the dean's list in college many times, but I have never had much of an interest or education in near-death experiences until I died on September 12th of 2004. My only knowledge of it was reading the book by Betty J. Eady, Embraced by the Light, and meeting her at a book signing. I was quite moved by her, actually, and wondered if the near-death experience had made her as gentle as she was, or if she had been that way before. I figured at the time it was a little of both. My near-death experience started out as June of 2004. My older brother had died a year earlier from a long and horrible 10-year battle with ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, horrible battle for him. And I was extremely depressed about that even after a year had passed. I also had a history of depression stemming from being molested as a child. I was seeing a psychiatrist, but not a therapist at the time, so my depression was going unchecked. The doctor prescribed a new medication for me, and within the first few days, I thought it was a miracle drug. The depression dissipated, and I felt better than I had in years. A year later, I found out that the drug had caused a mania or manic attack in me, and it increased to toxic levels. What I was feeling was brought about by the medication. Mania is a scary thing to experience once you've been through it. I had never had a manic attack before, so I didn't know or understand the warning signs. WebMD describes a manic attack as excessive happiness, excitement, irritability, restlessness, increased energy, less need for sleep, racing thoughts, and a tendency to make grand and unattainable plans. Charisma and charm also increase, while appetite can increase or decrease. For me, it decreased, and I lost weight rapidly. I had all of these symptoms within a few weeks. Again, I thought the medication was a wonder drug for me. I didn't understand the symptoms, and I didn't know that I was having a manic episode. Within 2 weeks of June, I decided to move to Salt Lake City from Logan to go to esthetician school and to go on a month-long journey across the U.S. to see friends on a credit card I had just received. I didn't have a job, and the credit card was for $5,000. I thought that I would have enough for a month, and that my job as an esthetician after I graduated, I'd easily be able to pay for it. It shows that my mind wasn't thinking clearly, and to realize just how much money that was. My daughter was staying with my ex-husband for the month of July, so I thought it would be a good time to take a trip. It just occurred to me to take off, see the country. June passed in a hurry, and I started on my trip, July 4th. I didn't start having problems until about the second week of July, when the pain started in my back. I had had pain like this before, but I didn't give it much thought. It was much worse than I thought it was from all the traveling. And instead of it being in one place in my back, it increased to all of my back during the duration of the trip. Still, I wasn't thinking clearly and thought it would go away on its own. After my month of traveling in July, I moved to Salt Lake City to go to esthetician school. By this time, I was sleeping less per night and the pain had increased considerably. Not thinking clearly, I didn't go to a regular doctor, but instead sought out a chiropractor. She saw me 2 or 3 times a week, but the pain continued to increase. I started to get off balance from lack of sleep and the decrease in food intake, and I tripped and stumbled quite a bit. I received many bruises all over my body, and they were not pain. My body was beginning to break down. I continued to still feel up, even though I was in increasing amounts of pain. It never occurred to me that anything was wrong, especially with the medication I was taking. I didn't understand where the pain was coming from, but I thought that since I was seeing a doctor, I would be okay. It still never occurred to me to see a regular doctor about the pain, even though it was becoming unbearable. I started sleeping less than 4 hours a night and not dreaming. The only thing I was eating was over-the-counter painkillers and liquor to help drown out the pain, but nothing was helping. A week before my death, I was sleeping 2 hours or less a night, and I had stopped dreaming altogether. I told the chiropractor all of this, and looking back now, I wonder why she didn't recommend that I go to the hospital or see a regular doctor. Every time I would go to see her, I was in worse shape than before. She obviously was not helping me, but I could not see that plainly. School started on Tuesday, September 7th, and I was able to make it through the day, but was unable to go the next day, Wednesday, because of the pain. It had spread to my abdomen and my chest and was becoming unbearable. Thursday came, and I went to the chiropractor before school. I had every intention of going to the school that day. Let me read to you about the experience from the prologue of the book I'm writing. Each touch of her hands brought pain. Even the lightest touch brought the pain. I stopped trying not to cry. The pain was just too great. "Hold on," she said as she pushed on my lower back. With the adjustment came a cry of pain. "I know," she said softly. "Just stay with me." She moved up my back gingerly and softly, trying not to cause any more pain than she had to. But each touch was explosive. I was in such great pain and so weak, she had to raise the table to an upright position so I could just step off when she had finished adjusting my back. I moved to get my jacket to cover the bruises. She asked me quietly, "Leslie, can I be frank with you?" I looked at her wearily with a tear-streaked face and said, "Yes, of course. I had come to trust this doctor, and anything she had to say to me, yes, I wanted to hear." "I don't know how to say this," she said. "Just say it. It's okay. Your body," she paused, "your body is dying." I felt a bit confused and shook my head lightly. "We're all dying from the minute we're born," I told her. "But you," she said, "you won't last the week unless you take care of what is going on in your life." I gave her a weary smile and slowly said, "I'll be fine. Things just have a way of working out for me." "No, I'm serious." She gave me an odd look, but she didn't say any more. I raised my hand goodbye as I walked out of the room. People in the waiting room stared at me as I left her office. I guess it was the bruises. But I didn't think much of what she had said or their stares. I wondered why she had said it, but I didn't really believe it. Of course, I was covered from head to foot in bruises. I was sleeping maybe 1 or 2 hours a night and hardly eating. I moved slowly as I walked up the stairs to my apartment. As I walked inside, again, I was taken by what a beautiful apartment it was. Towering ceilings and a beautiful staircase that went to the top floor in my private room. I turned back to lock the door, gingerly walked into the living room, and collapsed on the floor. I am writing a book about this experience, and there is a lot more to do it than I have the time to talk about tonight. But that was the beginning of the end for me. I started having convulsions and hallucinations. The hallucinations were sometimes very vivid and spiritual in manner, and I write more about that in the book. The first time I collapsed, it lasted about 30 minutes, and the pain was unimaginable. I had had my child by natural childbirth, and thought that was the worst pain I would ever feel, but this was beyond anything I could comprehend. Still, I didn't do anything about it. After the first collapse, I took some over-the-counter medication and tried to relax. The chiropractor had told me to put ice packs on my back and heat on every other hour. This did not help my back and did not help the pain in my abdomen or chest. Still, I didn't think I should get some help. About 2 hours later, I was on my bed, and another round of convulsions and hallucinations had started. This time, it lasted for 3 hours, and I was unable to think clearly. I had begun to lose energy, and I knew my body was dying. A voice said to me, "Do you want to live?" And after 3 hours, I yelled out, "Yes." The voice said, "Swing your arm over and dial 911. The phone had been sitting next to the bed the whole time. By this time, my daughter had come home from school, and I told her to go to the neighbors and not look out the window. I didn't want her last memory of me going into an ambulance. I dialed 911 and told them I was dying and needed help. I told the 911 operator that I was on an antidepressant, and the first thing she asked me is if I was suicidal. I said, "No, I want to live. Please help me." After what seemed an hour, but only must have been minutes, paramedics and firemen showed up at the door. I screamed, "Up here," because I was on the top floor of my bedroom, still. I was unable to move. My muscles had become so tight from the convulsions and the stress. They put me in a chair to take me down all the stairs, and I was going in and out of consciousness. At least my body was. I knew exactly what was going on around me, but my body was not obeying me anymore. I remember distinctly a fireman pounding his fingers on my chest, trying to get me to stay conscious. But my body went out of consciousness as my mind remembered everything that happened. As I was placed on the gurney and into an ambulance, I remember the fireman saying, "She's out of it." I wanted to scream, "No, I'm still here," but again, my body was not obeying. They took me to Cottonwood Hospital, which turned out to be a mistake. I was placed on a gurney and kept in the hall. They had no room for me. I continued to have convulsions and hallucinations, but they did nothing for me. When I was able to talk, I told them about the medications I was on and that I had a history of depression. That was a big mistake, too. They did not take my pain seriously. I was on a gurney in the hall for 4 hours without seeing a doctor or having any kind of help. I did not even have an IV placed in me. They did not take my pain seriously after I told them I had a mental health history. The pain and the convulsions increased. People would stare at me as they walked by in the hall. They took me to have a chest x-ray, but because I could not get off the gurney because of the pain and because I could not move my body, I could not speak. I heard the technician say, "Take her back. She's being uncooperative." He was very rude. Very condescending. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. I couldn't make a sound. Finally, I was placed in a little dark room with barely enough room for a bed and a sheet for the door. There was a nurse who had been helping me as much as he could, and I only knew him as Nurse Eric. I pleaded with Nurse Eric whenever I could that I needed to see a doctor desperately. I told him I was dying. I could feel the energy leaving me. He also did nothing to help me. After about 7 hours of being in the emergency room and not seeing a doctor, I had a quiet moment where I began to believe I was not going to make it. I did not want to die, but I knew I was not going to get any help. They just did not believe me. I had started to say goodbye to my daughter. I cried a lot thinking she was going to be raised without her mother, but I knew she would be okay. As I was saying goodbye, I noticed that my brother, who had died a year earlier, had slipped into the room. He smiled at me. By this time, the convulsions had stopped, and my body was frozen. I tried to smile back at him, and I don't know if I said it aloud or in my head, but I asked, "What are you doing here?" He looked so radiant and alive. He had been sick for so long, I had forgotten how handsome he was, and he looked at it at the time. He was wearing a t-shirt, the same color blue as his bright eyes. He was a completely radiant being, and I was shocked to see him. He told me he was there because it was time for me to leave. I argued with him. I said I wasn't leaving, that he would have to take me before I left. He just smiled and didn't say a word. I continue with my goodbyes to my daughter and to a man I have fallen in love with. For some reason, I was unable to say goodbye to my parents. I think if I had thought of them, I would have never been able to go. They have had so much tragedy in their lives. Not only did my older brother die a tragic death, but 2 years before I was adopted, another brother had died a tragic death. The two brothers, who were 6 and 8 at the time, were coming home from school on their bikes and came to a crossroads. The older brother, Cloy, stopped, and the younger brother, Casey, did not. He continued into the street and was run and hit by a construction truck. My brother, Cloy, had witnessed the entire thing. I had always had nightmares of a little boy screaming and screaming. These stopped after my brother died. So I wasn't thinking of my parents. I couldn't imagine the pain they would go through as their last child died in a tragic death. My brother came next to my bed and said, "All you have to say is, I give up the ghost." This made me laugh and I teased him, even in my pain. "I give up the ghost? What a corny thing to say." He laughed too, but he said that's all I had to do. After an hour of arguing with him and at my energy draining, I finally quietly said, through my tears, "I give up the ghost." And then I yelled at him, "See, I said it. I give up the ghost." As soon as I said it, a tunnel formed at the end of my bed, but I felt no urge to enter it. It was the tunnel that I think many other experiencers have described. It was as wide as my bed and very large, and it went up to the top and turned to the right, and it seemed as if it was made out of silver, mercury, liquid silver, and gossamer at the same time, and it undulated. And it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. After a few minutes of watching the tunnel, two men walked into my room, and they overlapped with the tunnel briefly. The tunnel began to fade, and my brother slipped out of the room. One of the men said he was Dr. So-and-so, and that I had a problem. I'm thinking, thank heavens, I'm finally going to get some help. The doctor said, "We can't find anything wrong with you, and we're sending in a social worker." That was all he said. And then he and the nurse left. It was 11 o'clock. I had been there 8 hours, and that was the first and only time I had seen a doctor. No one had examined me. No one had asked me questions, except when I had come in and I had said I was having hallucinations. They did ask about the bruises. They asked if I had a husband or boyfriend that had beat me up, and I said no. The bruises just aren't healing. At the end, they did give me a slight painkiller that only helped a little, and then the social worker showed up. She was very condescending and didn't ask many questions either. She said there were no rooms available for me, and could I come back the next day? I was still unable to speak much, but I told her if I had to come back the next day, I wouldn't make it through the night. She said that maybe there was a room in the residential house, and after a phone call, she said I was going there. They took me there by cab, and I still had the same clothes on that I had worn all day. A thin tank top, some shorts, and no shoes. They put me in a room with one other woman, and I tried to comprehend what had happened that day. Had I died, or was I just near the edge? And part of me was so happy to have seen my brother. I knew then that I would not be getting any help from the medical establishment, and if I wanted to get better, I'd have to do it on my own. I slept maybe 2 hours that night. The next day, I called my best friend, and she put things into perspective. She said that maybe it was my medication that was causing all of the problems. She made me look back, and I realized it was then that I started taking the medications where things had started to change in my life, and the pain had started only a month after I had started. But the damage had already been done, and there was no going back. Friday and Saturday, I spent on the hill. They expected me to go to groups and participate, but I knew what I needed to rest and get off the meds. They wouldn't let me stop taking the meds, because then it would show I was being uncooperative, and when it would take longer for me to leave the facility. I still had not seen a doctor. Saturday night, I felt my energy depleting again, and I felt that I was beginning to die again. I tried to explain what was going on to an aide, but all he did was check my blood pressure and put me in a private room. That night, I could not sleep. I was still in incredible amounts of pain. I began talking either out loud or in my mind to someone else. I'm not sure who it was, maybe my higher self, but we had a wonderful conversation that lasted through the night. We talked about politics, philosophy, science, the arts, and anything that came up. We laughed a lot, and I cried a lot, because I knew I was close to the end. I finally ended up falling asleep for about an hour and a half. As soon as I woke up, I gingerly sat on the side of the bed. A huge scroll opened up in front of me. It went from the floor to far above the ceiling. I was amazed at the sight. I started reading the scroll at the bottom, but it was not in English. It was in symbols that I had never seen before. I started at the bottom and understood what it was describing. It was easy to understand. As I continued up the scroll and understanding, it became a little more difficult and confusing, but I still was able to understand it. As I got to the top, it became so simple and so easy to understand. A light went off in my head, and I realized that I had just been shown the God particle and how spirituality relates to science. I had just been giving an expansive lesson in quantum physics. I said out loud, "I understand quantum physics," and I was excited about the prospect of learning more. But then the scroll slammed shut in front of me, and all that I had learned left my conscious mind. I believe I still understand quantum physics and can explain more if I have the chance. With that being done, I checked my energy level and felt it draining. I still didn't want to die, so I thought I'd best if I tried to eat some food. I went to the dining room, but I could not eat anything. I felt my energy draining fast, and I knew the end was near, but I did not want to go. I was still fighting it. I saw the closest aide, and I went up to her crying. "Please help me. I'm dying." She asked me if I was suicidal, and I said no, but I'm dying. Please help. With that, I collapsed on the floor. She stepped over me and didn't say a word. My energy was leaving fast. I did what I could to crawl to my room, reassuring myself that somebody would help me. They just have to, I thought. That's their job. I can't die in a place like this. I made it to the threshold of my room before I collapsed again. This time, another aide came by and said rudely, "You'd better go to the group or you're going to have to leave." I summed up whatever energy I had left and screamed at her, "Then you better call the cops because I'm dying and I need help." She left without a word. My energy was almost gone and I knew I was close to death, but I still had hope. And I thought they would help me. I thought they just had to help me in a place like that. I raised my head a little, and I saw a chair across the room, and told myself if I could just make it to the chair and sit, someone would come and help me. By this time, I couldn't crawl, but I could still use my arms. There was a wall close to me, and I slid to it, and put my face and hand on the coolness of the cinder block wall. It calmed me. I started pulling myself across the room. I told myself to say the ABCs, and that would take my mind off what was going on. By the time I reached the end, I would be at the chair, I thought. I started. A, B. Okay, what comes after B? Yes, C. C, then after C, what? This continued until I reached G, and I could not think of what came after G. Okay, Leslie, say your numbers, I told myself. They're easier. I started again, but could not remember past 7. This time, I had pulled myself to the center of the room, about halfway to the chair. I collapsed for the final time on the cold, dirty linoleum floor. I could no longer move. I lied there for a moment or two before I began to realize there were people around me. My older brother Cloy was there, right beside me, as if he were protecting me. To the side of me were my maternal grandparents. To the top was a person I do not know or do not remember. In the corner was a woman that I knew from my childhood. The first thing I said was, "What is he doing here?" referring to my grandfather that had molested me as a child. My brother gently said I needed to forgive him before I went on. I thought about it. I thought deeply about it. I thought about all the pain and depression I had suffered at the hands of the man that had done this to me. It took a while, but finally, I was able to find it in my heart to forgive him, and I smiled at him, and he smiled back. My grandparents didn't look like I remember them. They looked like I had seen pictures of them when they were younger. The woman from my childhood said she was there to help me because I had helped her daughter when she had died. Her mother had died just a few months earlier, and I had been in touch with her daughter to talk about her death. I had many good memories of this woman from childhood and was happy to see her. It was then that I felt another presence, a younger spirit. A small boy came up from behind a man I did not know. He was small and wore a light blue shirt, the color of his eyes, and green shorts with old-fashioned shoes. He came to me and sat on his heels next to me. I wondered who he was. He tilted his head back and forth, as if to study me as I lie on the floor. Then he gently patted me on the arm, as if to reassure me that everything was going to be okay. My brother Coy said, "I'd like you to meet my brother Casey," and everything became clear. I had always wondered what Casey was like. I even named my daughter after him, and now I was finally meeting him. He was a beautiful child. I could see my parents in him, and even my grandparents. After a few moments, he stood up and went again behind the man I did not know. By this time, I knew I was dead, and the fear had left me completely. I wondered to myself, aren't I supposed to see that tunnel again? But it seems I was stuck in my body. For a few brief moments, I was afraid. I thought maybe we died, but our brains went on living, and I would be stuck in a coffin for eternity with just my brain. Then I had a calm feeling that God hadn't brought me this far to end up forever in a coffin. Time had lost all its meaning, and I don't know how long I was on the floor with the people standing around me. I waited to leave my body, but it didn't seem like that was working. A few quiet moments went past, and I realized I was not breathing anymore. I wondered if I was holding my breath, and I searched my lungs to see if there was any air. Suddenly, a spasm racked my body, and I let out a long breath of air in a loud noise. Well, I'm not breathing, I thought. All fear had left me, and in its place was an intense feeling of curiosity. Well, what do I do now, I wondered. I listened quietly, and I realized my heart had stopped beating. Again, I wasn't afraid, just curious as to what would happen next. I had been working with my chakras during the whole time. They are energy centers in the body, and the idea has been around for ages. I thought to myself that if I closed all my energy centers, then I would leave my body and be completely dead. I started at the top of my head, and started to make my chakras very small and stone-like. I hit every one and went down to my spine. Nothing happened. Now what, I wondered. Then it came to me. Spirits are energy. I need to open them wide up. As soon as the thought came to me, it was like a tornado from the base of my spine up to the top of my head, and I had left my body. I was flying through the clouds like a bird. The feeling was amazing. I had never felt so free and light. The only thing that comes close to it on Earth is swimming and the lightness that it brings, but it still can't describe what I was feeling. There was someone with me, physically very close, but not my brother this time, but he was male. I still felt in human form, but was free from my body. I knew I wasn't trapped inside anymore. It was hard to believe how good I felt, how happy and excited I was. I remembered how I had died, and the pain, but it didn't seem to matter anymore. I remember I was leaving my family and my boyfriend, but everything was okay now, and I was happier than I had ever felt on my stay on Earth. We flew like birds, diving and twisting and laughing aloud. My guide took delight at my laughter and fun. I felt I had known him for a very long time, and he was pleased that he was the one who was taking me on this new adventure. We took a deep, thrilling dive and came out of the clouds into a small but beautiful valley filled with a virgin forest of evergreens. I could see the mountains on the other side, and I knew we had traveled back in time when the earth was young. The mountains were pitched steep and high, as if they had just been formed. There was no erosion from the weather yet, and they were jagged and sharp. Still flying, we dove steep again until we were close to the top of the trees. So close, I could have reached out and touched the top of them as we flew over. We stopped suddenly, but gently, in the middle of the valley and rose far above it. I was transfixed at the beauty. The colors were sharp and vivid. The dark green of the trees reminded me of dark emeralds, but they stopped at the base of the mountains. The mountains, they were gray, almost purple color, but the jagged edges out of dimension that made the colors contrast and stand out even more. I felt I was receiving a gift of seeing this valley before animals and humans would come along and change it forever. Later, I realized it was Cache Valley. Then I thought to myself, well, this is my death experience. I want more. My guide delighted in my adventurous spirit. No words were spoken, but I thought, I love the ocean. I want to see a beach. As soon as I thought the words, my guide and I flew over the mountains quickly and came to a beach. We hovered above it. It was a lagoon with trees and rocks and very beautiful, but I was disappointed. It was beautiful as well, but it didn't have the vividness of the valley. It looked more like a picture postcard than a heavenly vision. It was at this point that I decided to let my guide show me what I needed to see. Right at that moment, I was plunged feet first into the sea. I went so deep that the water was almost black. I looked up above me, and all I could see was a pinprick of light, but I wasn't afraid. The water surrounded me, and I became a part of it. I still felt in human form, but at the same time, I was the water, and the water was me. It was warm. I began to feel immersed in something I had never truly felt before. I realized it was pure love. The water loved me, and I loved the water. I wondered if this is the feeling of unconditional love, if that's what it felt like. I had felt love before, of course, but this was 100 times, 1,000 times more. I never wanted to leave. I stayed deep in the water for a long time. My guide wasn't with me. It was as if I needed to feel this love and understanding it on my own. But too soon, I was plucked out like a fish. My guide took me from being deep in the ocean, up through the atmosphere, and high above the earth in a moment. As a teenager, I had read a book about a man that had written down everything he had ever wanted to do, wish for, or achieve. What a wonderful idea I had thought at the time, and I made my own list. It was a very long list, but one of them was to see the earth from outer space, and there I was. It was more breathtakingly beautiful than I could ever imagine. No picture ever taken can capture the magnificence of seeing the planet with heavenly eyes. We were high enough to see all of it, but I also saw details, like a sparkle from an ocean wave, a dust storm moving across the desert, and different depths of the clouds. I was looking directly at the African continent, but as the clouds moved, I saw traces of the Mediterranean Ocean and the European coastline. I recognized the boot of Italy and the outlines of islands from Greece. What was most amazing was how alive the planet was. I felt its spirit and pleasure in its creations and complexities. I was looking at a living creature. It was an awesome sight that nothing could compare to, but it was just the beginning. Without a word, my guide and I took off into the universe at an incredible speed. Our first stop was the meteor ring just outside of Mars. We stopped briefly, and all I really saw was a bunch of what seemed like rocks floating around. Before I could think about what was happening, we started traveling again. I remember flying past Jupiter and was amazed at the colors. I didn't get to see the red eye of the planet. But we did come close to the rings, which weren't rings close up, but another set of floating debris, gases that made colors. Without a word, we took off again, and at astounding speed, we flew out of the solar system. What was most astonishing was that we actually traveled the distance through space. I didn't feel we were in human form anymore, but some form of energy. We didn't stop at once, and then suddenly appear at another. We moved at such an incredible high speed, even the speed of light would be like standing still. I was shown other galaxies with other planets, nebulas with the most amazing colors. The amazing colors are what I remember the most. Exploding and imploding stars. It was all so fast that I don't remember everything we saw, but the sight and the speeds were thrilling my spirit. I wanted to see more and more. But once again, without warning, my experience changed. I was thrown down onto a hard floor and I was alone. I felt I was back in my body form again with all the pain and weariness that I had left behind. I was on my hands and knees and I looked around. It was a small, dark room, all painted a deep, dark green. There was a wooden door directly in front of me. I looked to the left and saw a narrow stairwell with steep stairs that looked well used. At the top was another green door, but this one was amazing. It had white light streaming out through all four sides and shone down on the staircase. My body was so broken and tired. I knew I wanted to climb those stairs and go to the door, but I cried aloud, "God, I can't do any more. I am broken." The voice came back and said, "This is the last." I started to slowly climb up the rickety stairs on my hands and knees. But with each step, I seemed to gain more energy and the pain dissipated. When I reached the top, I was able to stand on my own. I knew I wanted to open the door and see what was behind it, but I knew that once I opened it, there would be no going back in understanding. For some reason, the door at the bottom of the stairs had no pull for me. I didn't know what was behind it, just that I wanted the door at the top of the stairs. I slowly turned the green painted doorknob and pushed the door inwards. My eyes grew big at the sight before me, and I stopped in wonder. It was pure energy. As I stepped through the doorway, I stepped onto a platform that was suspended in the middle of a vast circular tunnel that went forever in front of me. It was not at all like the tunnel I had seen in the hospital. This was massive, and I stood in amazement at its beauty. I looked behind me, and the door had disappeared, but I was still standing on the platform. The tunnel continued behind me as far as I could see. There was a thickness and a density to it, but it sparkled and flashed with colors and light, and I knew it was made entirely of energy. It turned very slowly in a counterclockwise movement, and it seemed as if it were made of great machinery. I heard a slight wind going past my ears. It was then that I understood that it contained every thought, every emotion, every experience, every movement of anything and everything that had ever existed. This was eternity. I took a step forward on the platform and continued to stare in amazement at the sight. I thought to myself, "This is wonderful. I'm a part of this." I took another step towards the edge. "I can be a part of this." I took the next step down to drop off the platform and into eternity. I had started to become a part of it. I thought to myself, "This is wonderful. I'm a part of this." I took another step to the edge. "I can be a part of this," I thought. I took the next step to drop off the platform and into eternity. I had started to become a part of it. It was then that I was slammed back into my body, and all the pain and the coldness came back, but it was worse. I raised my head, which seemed to weigh a ton now, and I looked out the window. Everything was ugly and terrible. I screamed, "No, you can't do this to me." I had tried so hard not to leave, had given in to the experience, and then sent unceremoniously back. I started to cry. I was heartbroken. Then a sense of joy came back as I remembered my daughter was here, and I'd still be able to be a mother to her, and the man I loved was here. I crawled over to my bed. My energy had returned, but the pain was still incredible. I stayed in the bed for a little while, then got up to see what was going on. I looked at the clock. It was 11:30. The last time I had seen what time it was 8:30, so I could have been gone at least 2 hours, and nobody had checked on me. I knew I was not going to get any more help in this place I was in. The first thing I noticed was that light was painful to my eyes. I had to wear sunglasses inside and out, even at night. I knew this must have seemed strange to the people around me and to the aides, but I couldn't help it. The next 2 days were spent trying to leave that place and get home so I could recuperate, but I had some unusual experiences in that place as well. I was lying on my bed, and some people were talking outside in the hall. I was only casually listening to their conversation, but then I realized that they were talking Spanish and that I could understand them. I don't speak a word of Spanish, but I could understand what they were saying. I laughed at this and thought it would be a great thing if I could now speak Spanish, but I couldn't. Another unusual thing that happened was that I was still lying on my bed, and my hand was up against a cinder block wall. It was cool, and it helped me to stay grounded. My eyes were closed, but slowly I began to see my eyes my hand through my eyelids. I could see the energy of it. I could see the outline, and slowly I started to see the veins and the bones, as if my eyes were x-rays. I stared at it, still with my eyes closed, for a long time, and again I was amazed at what had happened. As soon as I was home, I went off the medication. It was a very strong one, and for antidepressants, going off them suddenly is very dangerous. So I had to go off them quickly, but take some time doing it. The first year back was the hardest. I had had this amazing thing happen to me, but I didn't have anyone I could talk to about it. I was going to school, working, and raising my daughter, and it was all overwhelming. I did graduate from school and managed to keep a job for most of the year. But in 2006, I had to move in with my parents because I could no longer manage things on my own. They were very patient with me, and for that, again, I am grateful to them. The world felt different to me. I felt different to me. I knew I had changed, and that my world view had changed. Everything seemed new to me. Even the streets that I had traveled on many times, I noticed new things about them. At times, I was extremely happy, and then I would fall into deep depressions at being back on Earth. I longed for the freedom I had felt. Gravity was torture, and when I breathed, it felt like the air was as thick as syrup. But most of the time, I felt the water and the unconditional love I had experienced in the near-death experience. It was as if I was still a part of the water, and I felt that unconditional love towards all others. My patience increased, even as my agitation levels increased. The man I had cared about broke up with me because I couldn't explain what had happened, and he couldn't accept that I had been in a mental health facility. My poor daughter probably suffered the most because at times I was patient towards her. But other times, especially when the deep depression hit, I didn't have the wherewithal to describe what was happening to me. I'm glad to say that she has grown up to be a well-balanced young woman and is trying to make life on her own. I was psychic a bit before I left, but I found that I was incredibly psychic and intuitive after I came back. Thoughts would come into my mind, and suddenly someone would be saying the same thing. I knew when things were going to happen before they happened. Before the near-death experience, I was horribly afraid of death. I would have episodes of crying and depression because I didn't know what was going to happen. Afterwards, now, I have no fear of death. I know that it is just a changing, and it is easy as walking from one room to the next room with no door. Even painful deaths, such as mine, are a learning experience, and I believe that is what we are here on Earth to do, learn as much as we can in this reality. I've become especially sensitive to sounds and noise. My ability to hear has increased, and if there are noises in my apartment or other apartments around me, I hear them intensely. I don't listen to music as much as I used to because it just sounds like noise and not music. I no longer need to take as much medication as I used to, and I can only take small amounts. Larger amounts have an increased effect on me. I believe my experience was that of both spiritual and scientific. The learning of quantum physics has brought a new understanding of how we are all interconnected with life. When I was able to return to school, I told the teacher a little bit of what had happened. She told me to watch the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, and that it would blow my mind. I rented the movie shortly after that, and I found myself time and time again saying, yes, yes, that is exactly what I learned through my experience. I would recommend the movie to anyone if you haven't seen it yet. I find I'm a more spiritual person, not religious, but spiritual. I have guides that help me through this earthly experience now, and very often find myself in the company of angels. One of the most amazing things that happened was that I no longer experienced depression or flashbacks to the molestation I went through as a child. It no longer bothers me, and it seems so far in the past that I don't even think of it anymore. I think it was the forgiving of my grandfather that I came to this peace. And that's my story. Thank you very much. I'll be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Hi. You said that you didn't listen to music anymore.
Not really.
Now that you were back.
Right.
So what kind of experience did you have with music on the other side?
I didn't have experience of music on the other side. It's just that the music doesn't sound right anymore. It sounds like more like noise instead of music. It doesn't sound like the natural sounds of earth and heaven. It just sounds more like noise.
And one other question. When you were having your cosmic flying lesson,
yeah.
After you left the galaxy and you visited other galaxies?
Yes.
More than one?
Yes, many.
Did you witness other life on other planets?
I did not. I did not see other planets of life, but I believe that they're out there.
Could you expand more on your intergalactic travel?
It's hard to expand more. It was mostly, I saw so many things that it was hard to remember all of them. The most amazing thing was the speed, because we could not disappear from one point and go to another point. We actually traveled that speed from one galaxy to another galaxy. And I saw the most beautiful colors and nebulas, exploding stars and black holes and galaxies. I remember seeing a galaxy that was huge, and it was had spiral arms, and it was turning in a counterclockwise fashion. And I mostly remember the colors. I saw so much that I just don't remember it all, or else it was taken from me.
Oh, I have a question. When you saw that galaxy turning, could you see the actual physical turning?
Yes, I could. I could see the turning. It was turning counterclockwise. Mm-hmm. It had arms. It had a main star cluster, and then there were clusters of galaxies, of stars all around. And it was turning in a counterclockwise position.
And I was wondering, how does the God particle work?
The God particle, in quantum physics right now, they're studying something called string theory. Right now it's just a theory, but I believe it's the connection between spirituality and scientific modalities. The string theory is still just that. It cannot see it. It is so small that it's still just a theory.
Okay. I have a question for you. You saw black holes. Were you given any understanding as to what they are?
No, I just saw. I didn't experience anything.
Any insights?
I just saw. The most that I experienced was the quantum physics lesson that was taken from my consciousness.
How about any sort of, there's some discussion about dark matter or things that we can't see, although it's real matter that's out there. Do you have any insight as to that?
No, I don't. What I mostly remember is the colors. The colors are so vivid and so unbelievably beyond what we have pictures of now. That
have you seen some of the recent pictures from the Hubble?
I have.
Are they somewhat like what you saw?
They pale very deeply in comparison. They are beautiful,
right.
But they just pale in comparison to what it's like to see with heavenly eyes or unreal eyes.
You talked a lot about excruciating pain in your back and that you died. I kind of missed, like, what was wrong with your back and why did you die?
The man attack had caused the toxicity level of medication to rise in me. The stress level had increased. And so my body was just tensing up and it had started to break down inside. And so the pain was starting in my back from the stress. And it migrated to my abdomen and to my chest. And it was just from the stress and from not getting any sleep and not eating any food. And that was what the pain was from, and from the toxicity levels of the medication that went unchecked. The doctors didn't ask me about that when I was in the hospital. Because I had moved from Logan to Salt Lake, I wasn't under the care of a physician anymore. So I was just still taking the medication, and no one was checking on me.
Were you ever able to find out who your spirit guide was?
No, I wasn't. I'm hoping eventually I will, but I wasn't.
I'm interested in the comment that you had that you saw spiral galaxies moving. I just want to give a little background here for those who are not familiar with this. We here on Earth and our solar system are part of the Milky Way galaxy. We're about halfway, we're located about halfway from the center of the galaxy out to the edge. And it takes us, along with our sun, about 200 million years to make one circuit of our galaxy. So the reason I want to say this is because when you look at galaxies, you can't see them turn because it So it just takes too long. A human lifetime is too short. It's interesting to me that in spirit form, you were traveling through a universe that it would be totally impossible to travel through the way you were traveling in a physical form. To go at the speed of the space shuttle to the nearest star one way would take 130,000 years. That's to the nearest star. This lady's telling us about traveling across intergalactic distances. That would take not millions, but hundreds of millions, not even hundreds of millions, billions of years to go that far in human form. This opens up something to think about. In spirit form, we, just like Leslie, we can travel not only through space in ways that are impossible physically, but spirit form can also travel through time. Space and time don't have the same qualities that they have for us here, because it would make no sense. What Leslie's describing would make no sense if you just looked at it from the physical perspective.
Well, in the spirit world, there is no time, there is no space, there is no difference between 100,000 years from now and 100,000 years ago. It's all fine at the same time. So there is no difference between time and space.
For those of you who have been here before, almost every speaker I can remember hearing, I've been a member since 1998, has made this comment that on the other side, there is no time. And it's hard for us to imagine that because it's just not part of our experience.
Leslie, you've experienced the Earth and you saw many of its environments. You've read Betty Hee's book. In that book, she talks about that we can commit sins against the Earth by violating its laws. Did you get any sense of conditions of the Earth, maybe where we're going with it, the future of the Earth as you mentioned it formed?
Well, I got a sense that it was a beautiful spirit. I do believe we're going into tumultuous times, but I don't believe the world is going to end. I think that we're here for a long, long time. The Earth is here for a long, long time. I don't believe that the end of the world is nearing. I believe it's a very strong spirit and a very alive spirit.
I do a lot of scientific reading, and I love it, mostly from the newspapers. And I recently read that every galaxy has its own black hole, and that the black hole causes the energy that makes the galaxy spin. I believe that, and it made sense, and that was in the paper. Every galaxy has its own black hole.
That doesn't make sense.
I would like to have you expound a little bit more about telepathically communicating, because for me that was a very fascinating experience. I don't know if you have anything else that you want to say about it, but I think it is a very interesting thing to just suddenly be having conversations. I know it's timeless, and so it's hard to say what exactly happened, but if you can remember anything, I'd like to hear that.
Well, do you mean the conversation that I had the night before I died?
Actually, whenever the telepathic communication started happening. Oh. If it happened before your death. So did the telepathic communication happen before your death and during your death? Yes.
It was telepathic all the way through, because when my brother appeared, I was unable to speak, and it was telepathic with him. And then the second time my brother appeared, I was gone. I was dead, and I could not speak, and all of it was telepathic. And with my guide, it was telepathic. And now that I'm back, it's very telepathic at times, and very... sometimes I have to turn it off, because there's so many voices and noises going on in my head that I have to try and quiet them.
Was it your experience that the telepathic communication was actually an easier way to communicate? You could actually communicate more quickly and more effectively?
Oh, yes. Definitely more quickly and without having to explain oneself.
Yeah, just understood.
Could you give us an understanding or a little clarification on how that's different from talking?
Well, we have so many limitations on our words. We only have so many thousands of words to work with, but how many emotions and how many thoughts do we actually have that don't equal out to words? Just as I'm finding it hard to say what I'm thinking, if I were able to telepathically think it to all of you, then you would understand it just like that. But I'm having a hard time finding words. That's where we end up with that.
I'd like to ask a question. First off, I'd like to compliment you on how good you have explained everything.
Thank you.
Very precise and very listenable. On your telepathic, and you said that you was able to understand the Spanish language.
Yes.
Does that continue? Do you understand other languages or other people and their thoughts and what they're thinking?
The Spanish didn't continue. I wanted it to. I wanted to learn how to speak Spanish. But I do get the thoughts of people who don't speak English as first language. And them as thoughts and pictures. I don't get them as language. And so I don't communicate with them. I don't send messages back, but I'm able to receive them. And it's not in their language. It's just in thoughts.
Okay, I found it interesting that you were opening and closing chakras. Did you have a previous experience about knowing to open or close chakras? And then also, it seemed like energy was part of your experience, your x-ray vision and things like that. What do you think the significance of you being allowed to participate in knowing about that? Or?
Well, I've had experience with chakras before. I believe that there are... I mean, chakras is just a weird-sounding name for different energy levels, different energy centers in the body. It's just a natural thing. Chakras is kind of a weird name for it, different levels of energy in different parts of our body. And yes, I've had experience with it before, and I have worked with chakras before. I believe that after I came back, I was more energy inclined and able to see energy. I don't see auras. But I can see energy and see the different wavelengths and different sides of that. So I have worked with energy before, and it continues now.
It just increased it?
It increased it. Yes, it did. Incredibly.
Were you told why you were given the opportunity to go through the galaxies?
No, I wasn't.
And did you see colors in those galaxies that were... colors that we don't have here on Earth or are not as describable to us?
Oh, yes. It was... I mean, the pictures that we see now from the Hubble telescope are so amazing and so beautiful. But when you're actually there and you're immersed in the colors and you see them around you and you're totally enveloped by it and engulfed by it, it's just... it's more than I can explain. I did see more colors, I did see more energy, I did see... the colors were just amazing.
My son-in-law we were talking about this, and he has a theory that there are like wormholes through the galaxy that might enable you to travel greater distances much faster. Did you have any sense that you were traveling through any sort of a tunnel, or was it just kind of open space, free flying?
No, there was no tunnel. There was no tunnel whatsoever. We just traveled through space. And it's not like when you see in Star Trek and they go in a warp drive and the stars zoom past. The space is so open that you don't see stars just zooming past. It's so open, and we went so fast that there were no holes. There were just the speed. And it was fascinating and exciting and energizing all at the same time. I felt I was just pure energy.
Could you comment on any changes in your attitude towards people, or ethics, or any way your life has changed? Or
my life has changed dramatically. I wasn't a judgmental person before, but I was just a natural human being. And after I came back, I found I had this unconditional love for this world, for this planet, and for every human being on it. It's hard to explain, because unconditional love means unconditional. There are no conditions. Like everyone in this room, I love everyone. there are no conditions placed on it and no judgments whatsoever. And that's what happened to me afterwards.
You mentioned when, before you died or whatever, that you had to forgive your grandfather?
Yes.
How did you do that without having to go through a bunch of emotional work and stuff like that?
Well, I had suffered from depression for about 20 years, and at times severe depression. And so I had already done a lot of work. It wasn't easy, and it wasn't, at that time, it wasn't complete. But it was enough that I forgave him to go on. And after the experience, I had an experience where I did forgive him completely. And I saw his spirit rise up like a phoenix coming out of the fire. And I did, after a while, completely forgive him. I did my best to do that.
So you had to do more work then, to...
Not very much.
Just you had worked on it before.
Yes, I had.
You talked about how the water felt when you were sinking and going to the depths of the ocean.
Yes.
Did you have any sensation when you were flying? Could you feel any tactile feeling, you know, against your skin? Of course, you said you were out of body, but could you feel anything?
Is that the one I was flying through the Earth or flying through the galaxy? Oh,
well, if they're different, explain.
I didn't have a lot of tactile feelings. I just felt the freedom of not being held down by gravity or held down by the pain. I didn't feel a lot of tactile, but most of it was just a feeling of adventure and loving the speed and loving the adventure of the whole thing. It was like an adventure.
Can I ask, you mentioned that you saw a black hole. That's interesting to me. Someone else here in the audience mentioned that black holes are found at the center of galaxies, and that's something we've learned over the last decade or so. How close did you get this black hole that you saw?
I didn't get close. I saw far away. I saw a lot of galaxies and a lot of stars and a lot of planets from far away. Enough to see that what they were and was explained what they were, but I did not get close.
Did your guide explain any of this to you as you were going?
Not really. It was mostly an adventure to see what there was out there.
When you were looking at the scroll, and you said you didn't recognize the language, it wasn't in English, were the writings on it more of a hieroglyphic nature, you know, symbols that represented emotions and feelings, or it was actually language that would flow, but you just didn't recognize the letters?
It was physics symbols. Symbols from quantum physics, and from physics. But I've only had one small class on physics in my life, but they were physics symbols. And with numbers and symbols and explanations. And like I said, it started out at the bottom very easily. And as it went up, the symbols and the equations became more complex. But I began to understand them more and more and more, and it went up further and further and further. But it wasn't in the language. It wasn't in the hieroglyphs. It was in physics symbols.
Okay.
Did you feel on the other side that you got a feeling of what we're doing on the earth, like the purpose? And then as a second question, your personal mission?
I don't know my personal mission. I don't have that revealed. I think it has something to do with scientific and the spiritual. What we're here on earth is just to learn, to enjoy ourselves, and to learn as much as we can from people around us, learn to love, learn to love your experiences, and just learn. And don't berate yourself if you had a bad day and you yell at the kids. I mean, tell the kids you're sorry. And forgive yourself. Enjoy the experience.
How old is your daughter? And that was the first question. The other one, are you on antidepressants now?
My daughter is 19. And yes, I am. A small dosage. I still have problems with depression, with clinical depression.
But not the one you were taking before.
No. That caused such a horrible reaction in me. But
and the bruises, after those took clear?
It took weeks and weeks for bruises to clear.
You did not see a physician for that?
I finally did, after I came home from the hospital, from the unit, whatever you call it. And I finally did see a doctor, and she did help me with the pain, and she did believe me. I didn't tell her about the near-death experience, but she believed me that I was in pain and that I needed help with the pain. She did prescribe that, and she did help me recover from that.
But no commentary on the bruises. The doctors were not interested in that.
No, they weren't. After they found out that I had a mental health history, a long mental health history, about 20 years, they were no longer interested in my physical abilities or whatever.
Thank you.
I just want to thank you personally because I've been so silent for 10 years, I haven't dared to do what you did today. And I just really want to acknowledge the courage that took. And I saw your leg shaking a little bit. And I thought, oh, I'm so proud of you. And I'm so grateful that you had the courage to do that. It gives me courage.
Thank you.
And I thought your message was really shared beautifully. Thank you very much for doing it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Did you ever take action against the doctors that ignored you?
What could I prove?
I know, that sounds so bizarre.
I know. I wish I could. I mean, the chiropractor I don't understand, the doctors I don't understand. I kept asking for help, but I don't understand how I kept falling through the cracks. I just kept falling and falling and falling, and no one would help me.
Well, you said that they just lost interest in you because you had a mental health.
Yes, they did.
That is terrible.
It is. I was left in the hallway for hours and hours without any medical help at all.
I was wondering, the psychic abilities, you mentioned you had some before this experience, and when did those start? Were you born with it? Do you believe people are born with it?
I believe everybody has some. I believe some have more than others. And for me, it started when I was young.
And can people develop it from meditating and things like that?
Well, sure. I think it's easily developed. Sometimes I'm so psychic that I have to turn it off. That I get so much feedback that I have to just quietly say that's enough and let it go.
You mentioned that there was a man you didn't know. Do you think that was Jesus or God?
I don't know. I feel someday that I will know, but I do not know. I don't have a strong belief one way or the other, and to me right now, it doesn't really matter. It was just a very strong person there that cared for me and loved me, and I knew that I loved them. But I don't remember who it was, and I think in time it revealed to me.
And do you know what caused the bruises?
The bruises were caused by me stumbling and falling, and there were so many of them because they were not healing, because my body was just deteriorating, and so they were not able to heal. So I looked like I had been beat up. There were so many, but they just were not healing.
So it wasn't an internal bleeding?
No.
Yeah. Good question for you. How do you turn that off? You know, you say sometimes you feel these. I have a really good reason to know that or to ask that. I was just curious.
A lot of times I just have to say out loud to myself, you know, be quiet. Let it go. Let everything go. If I need to know something, it'll come to me. But a lot of times I speak out loud. I speak to angels. I speak to my guides, and I just say, look, I'm done, I'm tired, I'm still human, I need a break. So I just ask for a break, and I quiet the voices inside of myself.
I'm intrigued by your comment a minute ago that after your near-death experience, but anyway, you now feel that our purpose here is to learn and to enjoy life here while we're here. Do you have a different perspective than, say, previously? How important it is to be concerned about mistakes we make in our daily lives, or how do you have a different perspective on being judgmental toward other people for small mistakes or ourselves? Has your perspective on that kind of thing changed?
It has changed dramatically. There are so many small things, so many mistakes that we as humans make towards each other. I mean, just a slight slip of the tongue. And somebody had hurt feelings for years. Families split up over some silly little thing. And we just need to let it go. We need to let these little things go and realize that none of us are perfect. And that to be judgmental is just to be judgmental against yourself. And to stop being judgmental against yourself, then to stop being judgmental towards other people. Just let the little things slide. They're just little things. They don't matter.
I was wondering, what's the closest thing to love that you experienced in the depth of the oceans? What would be the closest thing in our life? Because it's very elusive. The word love is to me.
It is. I would say the closest thing I have to that is the love I feel towards my daughter. Unconditional, unconsequential love towards my daughter. And my parents have shown me such great love. That's the closest thing I can tell you. The love between the parents and a child is the closest thing I can tell you that I felt while I was in that water and felt that love.
Does that mean that you would do anything for your daughter, or where do you draw the line as to what it is that we should do for those we love and our children, and where we could say, this is not coming perhaps from the best loving way to help them or to...
Well, there's a difference between loving and teaching. You have to teach your child. You may love them, but you can't just give them every toy they want for Christmas. That's not love. That's going to teach them greed and materialism. That's not love. That's teaching them. We need to teach our children. We need to be taught. Just because we love them doesn't mean we do whatever we can for them. The best we can is what we can do. But my daughter still needs to get a job. She still needs to pay her rent. I can't pay her rent. She still needs to make a car payment. She still needs to make all these other things. And she has to do this on her own, no matter how much I love her. She has to learn these things. Because if I did all these things for her, what would she learn? I would be taking that experience away from her. And where would the love be if I took those experiences away from her, if she didn't learn? That's why we're here on Earth, is to learn. And I'm not going to take that experience away from her.
So you allow the consequences?
Yes.
Anything.
Mm-hmm. I do the best I can, and my parents are great help with my daughter, but she's grown. She has to learn the consequences of her actions. She has to learn. That's what we're here for.
I just had a thought, Leslie. Have you ever asked yourself, why me?
Oh, of course.
What would you... A lot of us say that about certain things about our lives, you know, why me?
A lot of times it's when I'm feeling sorry for myself and sorry for the experience and saying, why me? Why did I go through this torture? Why did I go through this pain? But then I remember all the things I learned and all the things that I have gained from this experience. And I no longer say, why me? I say, why not me? Why not me? I'm a wonderful person. We're all wonderful people. Why not everyone?
Well, that's the healthy attitude, and I appreciate that, because, you know, instead of why me, say, hey, try me.
Yeah, why not? I mean, why not me?
Exactly. So, I resonate with a lot of what you're saying here, and I've never had a near-death experience, and I'd probably be blown away if it happened to me. Say, well, why me? Why did I get this blessing or this challenge or whatever, you know, that type of thing.
That's why I have the experience, so that people like you can experience vicariously, so you don't have to go through that. You don't need to. Maybe in a sense you're more special than I am. So you don't need to go through the experience. You can live it through me, and I can explain it to you, and I can do my best to explain it to you and guide you as much as I can. And so you don't have to. You can learn without going through that experience yourself.
You talked about that we need to learn as much as we can on this earth. What is the purpose for that knowledge? Is there a purpose for it on the other side?
There's always a purpose for knowledge. You never know when you're going to need that little snippet of information.
Well, I guess what I'm saying, is that something that we will need on the other side? Or?
No, we don't need anything on the other side. We're perfect the way we are. But we come here to learn experiences that we cannot learn in the non-physical plane. This is a physical reality. And as non-physical spirits, there are certain things we cannot learn without having a body, without having the the emotions without having the body itself, without having gravity that we have to deal with, without having to deal with other people, and without having to read minds. We have to learn how to express ourselves through language. We have to learn to express ourselves emotionally more than we have to on the other side. And we just learn from what we have on this side. But on the other side, we're still just as perfect.
You were talking about your guides. Are they the same ones that you had before, or do you have different guides than you on the others when you were flying? Is it the same guides that you have now?
No.
Different guides.
I'm sure I had spiritual guides all along, but I never became aware of them until after my near-death experience.
The different guides, family members, and those that are attending us and taking care of us, can we readily for their assistance on an ongoing basis? Or
an outstanding yes. You can ask at any time for help, for assistance. You don't need to go through God. You don't need to go through Jesus. You ask for help from whomever or whatever you need.
Do you think the guides that we have, the guardians or whatever you want to call them, do you think they're there? You know, you mentioned a few minutes ago someone asked you about how we should help our children. And is it always the best to just do whatever we can for them? Is that always best? And you said, no, not always, because they need to learn for themselves. We need to help them learn.
Yes.
What about the guides and the guardians that we, do you think they have the same dilemma about helping us or helping us learn?
Oh, at times, yes. I do believe that. There are times when I've asked for things and I haven't gotten them and I've thrown a fit. But afterwards, I've learned that it's for my best that I didn't receive what I asked and that they were looking out for my better, higher self and that it was a good thing that I didn't receive what I had asked for. So they're like parents, almost.
Just one brief question. On your guides, are they relatives or just someone that's been assigned to you?
I look at them as old friends. So we've been together for a long time. And I've been guided to them in their earthly planes or other planes in reality. That we're all kind of friends and working together. So it's all combined.